public hearing is subdivision 2005-63, Dream Builders Construction Incorporated.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district in Nanticoke Hundred, Sussex County, dividing 307.71 acres into 251 lots, located south of Route 40, 580 feet west of Route 591. This application was also reviewed by the Technical Advisory Committee, and I would ask Mr. Abbott if he has any additional comments.
Mr. Wheatley, NREC has issued a septic feasibility statement indicating that the site is suitable for on-site septic systems. We received a letter from the town of Bridgeville. The commissioners of Bridgeville take no position on the matter. However, the town has purchased and leased land in that area for spray irrigation purposes. This will be taking place on the Tatman and Wheatling properties, both on Apple Tree Road. You may want to make the developer aware of the future land use in the area. That was signed by Bonnie Walls, the town manager. And we received a letter from T.S. Smith & Sons addressed to the commission. They indicate that they have been a family-operated farm since 1907. We have had many good business years, but the past 10 years have not been good. In order to stay in business, we have sold a farm to a local builder. The farmland we have sold is an ideal location for a development. The proposed development would be a great tax asset to the Woodbridge School District and help continue Bridgeville's growth. Please act favorably on Dream Builders Construction Incorporated request for the Orchard Point subdivision. And that was signed by Thomas Smith, T.S. Smith & Sons. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, thank you. Is there anyone here representing this application?
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Eric Howard again, Wilson, Howard, and Byer here on behalf of the applicant, Dream Builders, Inc. You just heard us just a few minutes ago, and so a lot of the, again, Mr. Murray of Kersher Engineering is again, it's acceptable handing the commission each a copy of a smaller version of the rendering that we have on the easel. Much as the, this, just to give a little background again, without stealing the thunder from Mr. Murray, who will give the presentation on the land development. This property is located on Redden Road, just a little bit east of the town of Bridgeville. It is near some other large subdivisions that Mr. Murray will talk about. The property is remarkably similar to the property you just heard about, Deer Creek, in that it is, to some extent, largely buffeted by wetlands. It's on the Gum Branch and the Nanticoke River Ditch form two of the boundaries of the property, with wetlands adjacent to them, which form a buffer around the residential part of the property. As the other proposed subdivision, there it's relatively flat land with need to do very little clearing. The wooded area is adjacent to the wetlands, and there will be no clearing of that area, minimal clearing to reach some of the lots near the back, as Mr. Murray will talk about. It is also a straight subdivision, what I would call a straight subdivision, in an AR1 zone district. The proposal is to create 251 lots on approximately 307 acres. We are not asking for any clustering or any high density. You will hear Mr. Lee also testify as to the reason for the why he's applied for the subdivision and the somewhat rustic or rural look he's looking for. There are significantly large common areas in this subdivision. You see one up at the top. Again, Mr. Murray will talk about that, of almost 13 acre, which almost the size of some subdivisions will be a large open area for recreation and other open areas. In total, the open areas, excluding the wetlands, are almost 25 acres of this parcel, excluding the rights of way and the wetlands. We believe that this is also land that's completely appropriate for subdivision. You'll hear Mr. Lee testify as to, when you heard the letter from Mr. Smith as to why They sold this property. Yes, it's in an AR district, and there's agricultural use that occurs in an AR district. The AR district is also approved in a suitable district for low-density single-family housing, and that's exactly what we propose on this property, on a property that the farmer who had been farming it for years decided it was no longer economically feasible to farm this land and to continue farming on other lands where he did want to continue farming. He elected to sell this land. So with that being said, I would again turn the podium over to Mr. Murray.
Good evening once more. Again, my name is John Murray. I'm a project manager with Kircher Engineering. Again, here this evening representing Mr. Lee, Dream Builders, for the Orchard Point subdivision. There's a lot of attributes that this subdivision has that are very similar to the previous application that we were just discussing. And I'll get into those in a little bit. To go over the bulk details of the project, as was stated, the parcel is 307.71 acres. On that 307.71 acres, Mr. Lee is proposing to develop 251 single-family lots, three-quarter acre again in size. All lots would be serviced by an individual lot well. All lots would be serviced by an individual lot septic system. As was stated, the septic feasibility letter was obtained from Denerec in a report prepared again by Coastal Soil Consultants Incorporated. The density on the site, we're proposing 0.82 units per acre. The open space we've provided on this parcel is 80.62 acres, inclusive of the wetland area. 55.95 acres of the property is set aside as delineated wooded wetland environment. An additional 24.67 acres has been set aside for stormwater management and or active and passive recreational use. The property now is located, as you can see, and I believe it's figure 5 and figure 6 of just the basic pictures that I've given you, a mile away from a 96-lot subdivision known as the Bridgeville Chase subdivision. If you can see it, we didn't want to overkill with the pictures of the development, mainly to show you the name of the development and a general picture, but I think the general picture gives you more of an idea, development-wise, of what this development would look like. Again, the wide open swales has been brought up on the previous application. I think that would give you a more representative view of what those drainage swales look like. We are also proposing those open drainage swales throughout this development, namely because the majority of this parcel has well-drained soils, with the exception of some areas, as I'll refer to as the point along more to the southern side of the property. I believe in the feasibility letter that Denerec provided, there were 17 lots that would, if permitted to have individual septic systems, would have sand systems. And those are in that point area where it is surrounded by forested wetlands. The remainder of the property up along the front were actually decent soils. There were some gravity and also LPP-type systems, which allows for a decent natural discharge back into not only the wetlands, but into the groundwater table that basically services and discharges into Gum Branch and the Nanticoke River Ditch, which are located along the, I guess that would be the southwest and the southeastern property line. We are awaiting a letter of no objection on this project. We submitted this plan to DLDOT at the same time we submitted the previous application. We received comments from DLDOT at the same time as the previous application, but we have not obtained the letter yet. That is something that we are still awaiting. Similar with the previous subdivision, it was made fairly certain in the plus comments and in the letter of no objection comments that this development, unlike the Deer Creek, which was somewhat uncertain, if this project were to be granted preliminary approval and we were to submit an entrance design, the Delaware Department of Transportation will require that the entire road frontage along this development be road milled and overlaid. With hot mix. It is, again, a tar and chip surface. I think you can see in the, I believe it was figure 3 or figure 4 of the photos, it gives you somewhat of an idea of what the road surface is. It also shows a bus passing the site, and for good reason. This was brought up on our previous application. We had talked with the client about possibly providing, again, a bus stop for this project, being in the Woodbridge School District, and they were not objectionable to providing that. In fact, I believe Mr. Howard had told me earlier that the superintendent for the Woodbridge School District was actually here earlier, Mr. Howard?
Yes, Mr. Lee.
And he, unfortunately, he left before the application. But he was actually here not in, as we discussed with him, not in opposition. It was more to get an idea of what the development was going to look like. And the Woodbridge School District, from what I understand, is and somewhat in favor of this development, namely because, as was brought to Mr. Howard's attention earlier, the Woodbridge School District has had a difficult time retaining teachers in their school system, namely because, I guess, lack of funding, I'm assuming, or work conditions, payment, whatever it may be. But this development most certainly would add to the number of students, I would assume, to the local school district. Switching back to the natural features of the site, as part of the Technical Advisory Committee comments, we were required to give a 30-foot forested buffer along the western property boundary, which is the boundary as shared between this property and I believe it was the Collins Farm to the west.
That's you're talking about the adjoining property?
Correct.
I'll take care of that.
to the adjacent property, we're required to provide a 30-foot forested buffer. It should also just be noted that on the interconnection that DelDOT is allowing us or requiring us to provide as part of the preliminary plan, Century Drive, we show an interconnection to the farm, to the western property boundary. That property is actually in agricultural protection now. So the interconnection, at least from Blossom Drive to the adjacent property, would be more, if construction were to take place, there would be more of a paper street in that section. Of course, since there would be no possible interconnection in the future, no possibility for development. As stated, stormwater management would be serviced again by wet ponds if the client so wants them for aesthetics. The soils are conducive to permitting us to have an infiltration-type practice for all stormwater management due to the rapid infiltration rates in the soil. We find it as a benefit simply because due to those natural infiltration rates, it limits the amount of water, stormwater management that we would be sending into those forested wetlands. Again, the property is completely farmed, as you'll see in the pictures. And again, the natural conditions of the property make the pre-development runoff rather high. And that actually aids for addressing more of water quality management post-development rather than a true quantity management. I won't beat this to death, I guess, again, but we did also bring up to the client when they first brought us the project the idea of doing a cluster-type development. Conceivably on this, again, doing the math, at 215.4 acres times 2 units per acre, it is conceivable to a preliminary plan request 430 units for this parcel. Again, that's not something that we are looking for due to the nature of the development in the area. Again, most properties are either farms or the adjacent development, as we discussed, is also 3/4 acre lots. Just briefly touching on Ordinance 99-9C and some of the items I may not have already discussed, as with the previous development, none of the delineated wetlands as shown on the plan are going to be disturbed as any part of the construction if that the project so gets to that stage. Those wetland areas will remain intact. There will be some limited tree clearing, as you can see on the blueprint, to areas along the point in the back and to some properties along the eastern property boundary along Gum Branch in order to make room for a lot for a septic system. Again, we're providing 80.62 acres of open space, which will remain open for either active passive recreation or left alone as natural wetland environment. All roads will be designed to Chapter 115 of the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance, again with roadside swales, not a closed drainage system. Again, the public transportation in this area, there is no plus service that travels down Redden Road. I don't think that our client would be objectionable to having some sort of plus stop for anyone for this development, but as we understand, DelDOT does not have any plans to make this development a true stop along their route. That's all that I have on the nature of the development. If you have any questions, I'll be here to answer anything you may have.
Thank you, sir.
Call Mr. Jimmy Lee once again. Mr. Lee, if you could state your name for the commission again.
James Lee, the owner of Dream Builders Construction. I reside 13610 Wolf Road, Greenwood, Delaware.
Mr. Lee, I know some of this is going to sound a little repetitive, but for the record, why have you come before the commission seeking to subdivide this land?
Well, for a lot of the same reasons you guys have already heard.
Tell us again.
I'll tell you again. Actually, even more so in the Bridgeville market, there are, near the Bridgeville area, there are no, there other than the over 55 community, there are no major subdivisions in that particular area for local people, for housing. As a matter of fact, as the Kevin, the Woodbridge School District, Kevin Karstner, he was here for the meeting earlier, and he called me outside, and he just wanted to know what, you know, what our plan was for the subdivision, and I explained to him, and I told him we were trying to get a little bit more affordable type housing. And when I say affordable, you know, $250,000 to $300,000 price range for house lot packages. And one of his comments was that he's bringing new teachers. He's trying to get new teachers to come to Woodbridge, and they can't even find affordable places to live in that particular school district. Because so there's not a lot available as far as to build houses in that particular area. I know there's a lot going on down towards the beach, but when you move, you know, west towards the Route 13 corridor, unless you get further south, there's a lot of just places where if somebody wanted to build a house, unless they can find, you know, a little rural lot where it's a, you know, strip subdivision or something like that, there's not a lot. And there's a lot of that going on in this particular area at this time. I mean, you know, in every direction as far as where there's just, you know, strip dividing. And
do you think of a 1,500 to 1,800 square foot house as a non-desirable house?
Well, that's, you know,
that, a real demand for that size house?
There's a huge demand for 1,600 square foot ranchers that, you know, that are kind of cutesy with two car garage, you know, three bedrooms, two baths for the first time home buyers and the local people. Because, I mean, the house just, I mean, I'm sure you're all aware of it, that the land prices in this particular area have gotten, you know, just outrageous. You can't find anything for less than $100,000. And for, you know, one of the local, you know, people in this area, if they want to live in this area, it's almost gotten to the point where it's not going to be affordable for them, because, you know, they can't afford a $300,000 or $400,000 house. I mean, I think it can be done tastefully with real nice houses and not cookie cutter houses and all custom. And I'm trying to, I just think there's a market for that more so than the $500,000 and $600,000 houses.
You would.
And I tend not to interrupt you. I am a custom home builder, and I build $400,000 or $500,000 houses, but I would much prefer to build a house for a young couple who barely qualifies for their home mortgage. They're tickled to death. They love the ground you walk on. You build a house for somebody that's $500,000 or $600,000, they will drive you nuts. So I'm moving that way instead of the other way, and that's part of my. Yes.
With Deer Creek, there was questioning about builder tie-in. To what extent you were going to save all the lots for yourself? What do you intend to do with that?
I actually, I'm going to treat this very similar to the other. If there's, you know, there's a lot of builders that are, I've got some guys that are down in the Seaford Bridgeville, Seaford Laurel area that are builders that I know. You know, they can't find any lots, and it's going to be a similar situation that, you know, I'd be willing to, you know, as long as I can approve the plans and the specs, you know, I'd be willing to sell some lots to other builders and even home buyers, you know, that are interested in just buying a lot. So there's not going to really be any builder tie-in. I'd like to maybe keep maybe a quarter of the lots for inventory. Presently, right now, I have no inventory. As far as if somebody comes in my sales office and wants a house lot package, I have two houses on the market right now that are just getting ready to be finished. They're in established developments. One of them in the Hollies outside of Milford, the last lot in there, and one at Hudson Pond, there at Sussex Woods by Hudson's Pond, and it's the last lot in there also. So I have no inventory for customers that want a house lot package. And I saw this coming 2 or 3 years ago, but the wheels turned slow. And so I'm presently out of inventory.
So what are you going to do? Is it going to be your houses that you're doing lot home packages on and it's going to be affordable housing? Or are you going to be selling houses to builders? I mean, sounds like
your hands,
you're not going to have much control over it.
That is perhaps somewhat more Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, you know, we heard that on the last
one. Let me ask you a couple little more specific questions.
Go ahead,
because we hear this affordable housing thing all the time, okay? You're going to be in the 250 to 300 range, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm sure that you have some familiarity with what's involved in financing a home and so on.
Absolutely.
What income level typically would you need to be to qualify for a $275,000 house? What income level do people need to be at?
As far as for a family?
Well, sure. Yeah, 'cause that's who's going to live in the house.
I would say, you know, probably they'd be have to be in the 50 or 60 thousand jointly. If it's two incomes, probably $50,000 or $60,000 income range to
combined, or a piece.
Yeah, combined.
Combined. Okay.
Yep. That's a factor of interest rates too.
Well, of course, I understand. Yeah. I understand that. I'm just trying to get some notion of what.
And I don't know whether, you know, anybody's familiar with that Sussex Woods area. I've built several, you know, ranch style houses with two car garages in that area. And they've sold anywhere from 180 to 280. You know, in that's next to the other development, the one that's closer to Lincoln. And you know, we're trying to. I'm not saying low income housing. I'm saying affordable.
Ms. Lee, if someone came to you and said, I have my own builder you don't know, but you would be able to approve the plan and say, I want to buy a lot in there and have my builder build the house.
Absolutely.
Would you have a problem with that?
Not at all.
The concern the commission has with those statements, and it goes beyond, you know, just your application tonight, is that the commission looks at this as a land use application. There's no way to verify, you know, what type of house is going to be built there or who's going to be buying it. And we hear all the time that it's going to be affordable housing and for the community, you know, and it sounds all good and well, but once it's approved, and it doesn't really matter anymore. And, you know, so I guess
I understand what you're saying. Well, I mean, these gentlemen here, I mean, they see me in this office getting COs, you know, once or twice a month. I mean, these guys could tell you what I do. I mean, I'm just telling you what I do.
I don't think anyone has an issue at all with what you do. You're going to do what everybody else in your situation does. You're going to maximize your opportunity to make money in it, and there's nothing wrong with that. All I'm seeking to do is establish what affordable housing really is, and I have a hard time believing that a combined family income of $50,000 will qualify you for a 30-year $250,000 mortgage loan. I mean, I just don't think that's right.
The ratios, I always think they're tight. And then I tell people, I don't know how good an idea it is, but I think the last ratio, 28% of your disposable income can go toward your mortgage payment and you qualify.
Right.
So, I mean, doing the math, I'm not sure what, but you can spend up to 28% of your disposable income on your mortgage payment.
Right, qualify. which for somebody making... Yeah, well, I can. That number is probably about $1,100 a month, you know. And I don't know. I've looked at a mortgage table in a long time, but it just seems to me that it'll be pretty tight for somebody at that income level. But
the price of homes that he mentioned, not looking at the mortgage issue, but the price of home he mentioned is considered to be affordable, but at the county level, as far as that committee that worked on
affordable housing, moderately priced housing program.
It was $225,000 to $250,000, somewhere in that range, mid range $225,000.
Yeah, that's what I think we're asking is what is that really?
That's what the committee saw as being affordable.
Okay.
But I don't know what they did as far as the mortgage issues
or the family income
and all that.
It actually isn't that's not an issue for us. Per se, but since you brought it up, that's why we're asking these questions. But certainly, you will do what any prudent businessman would do, and I think everybody up here understands that. So,
I could ask one more question, Mr. Lee. Was there a neighboring farmer who was here tonight?
Actually, Addison Tapman, who's one of the larger landowners in that particular area, he owns the land on the other side of the road, and he was an older gentleman sitting here with his wife over on the side, and he came to me and he said that he had he knows it's going to be a subdivision because he's friends with the Smiths, because mm-hmm. they're neighbors. And he said that the only reason why he was here, he said there was a culvert that went across the road there, drained one of his fields, and he wanted to make sure I wasn't going to do anything to stop the water flow from his field going across the road. And I said, no, none whatsoever. And he said, well, Jimmy, that's the only reason why I was here, and good luck with your subdivision. And he left. And Landy Correll is who he was talking about. Owns the adjoining farm, and it's 90-some acres, and he has sold the development rights and put it in land preservation. So the land adjoining that is agricultural land where the buffer is, it's all going to be just farmland. And the Smiths own the very next farm, joining that one.
All right.
So all the property owners, the farmers on both sides, have give their blessings.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. We'll see if anybody has any questions for you. Mr. Gordy?
Was there anything mentioned about sidewalks or streetlights?
We're going to do street lights, but we were trying to stay away from the sidewalks, trying to keep it more...
So you're saying you're having a 251-lot subdivision with no sidewalks. I could... Now, the other one I could see, but this that's a big subdivision not having sidewalks.
Well, we weren't figuring it out because we were trying to keep it a more rural country-type setting. And
yeah, but it's hard to keep a 251-lot subdivision a rural setting. That's my opinion. I mean, I don't know, but okay. And you say you are receptive to a bus stop?
Yes.
Bus stop?
Absolutely.
And the buffer along the farmland, is that a 30 foot or 50 foot? I believe it's along Ag Preservation
District. Is it an Ag Preservation District on the?
I think it has to be 50. Yeah.
We're showing it as 30 per the TAC comments.
It's 30-foot right. buffer with a 50-foot buffer as far as setback to the house.
That's true.
Up to the house.
Right.
That's
right.
Okay.
Okay.
If you wanted that deep restriction,
If it's agriculture district next door, you have to put it in the restrictions anyway.
It is. That is in the restrictions.
You're talking about this recreation area. It's just what, walking trails?
Actually, I was going to leave that up to the homeowners association, but it's 13 acres. I mean, so it could be ball diamonds. Right now, it's tillable ground. They're planting sweet corn, you know, right where that 13 acres is. So it could be any kind of athletic fields or ball fields or walking paths.
It's a clear field right now. It's not a wooded area.
No, it's all clear field. Matter of fact, all the. All these areas are all tilled ground. So this is where they were talking about having either walking paths or ball diamonds or soccer fields or whatever. And like I say, this one little parcel here is 13 acres.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
When you say that you're going to leave that up to the homeowners association, is what you mean that you're essentially going to say here is the land, you guys can do whatever you want to with it?
Well,
or are you going to build something there for them, or what?
We were going to do the walking paths,
okay,
to access it. They're already on the plan. And if they wanted to, like, eventually put the ball fields or soccer fields and so forth, I mean, it's going to be an area, you know, that's
going to be up to them to do that.
Yes.
So essentially, what you're providing for amenities are these walking paths.
Yes.
Very good, Mr. Correa.
All right. That's all the questions I have right now.
All right, you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the walking pass, how do I walk to get to the walking pass?
Go ahead.
John,
sure.
We were anticipating that.
Sure. That was something that actually was not addressed on the preliminary plan that you have in front of you in the way of access to those locations. The properties that are surrounding the open space now, we could provide an easement in the way of an access easement, which would go down a common property line. There's common easements down interior lot lines now, or would be proposed. Now, we have the room to be able to divide the lots where we would propose in three separate areas, namely just talking about the area where the walking paths are being shown. We have the space off of all three of those road frontages surrounding that to make an area designated between the lots, not a part of the lot, for access to those locations. It was not something that was on the preliminary plan that's in front of you. And to be quite honest, it's something that we did not think of until about a week ago.
It was on my comments to you from back, whenever in February. Because it was labeled as stormwater management and said that there's no access to lots, the area behind lot 42 and 43. Anyway, I'll just throw that out there.
If that's the case, then that would have been our oversight.
We discussed that,
and in every one of those areas, the lots were bigger lots. They were way larger than 3/4 acre lots, the way they were. So there's room to put an area to those walking paths.
I guess just another comment. Do you see any need for parking spaces down there? So if somebody, say from lot 83, wanted to drive down there to play baseball,
we'd be willing to make that available. Okay. Even if we have to eliminate a lot, for that matter.
I realize you might not know the answer to this, but I'm looking at something that shows that there's land owned by Bridgeville Rifle and Pistol Club. Is that something that they actively use as, say, a firing range?
Yes.
And will that notice of those activities be included in your notice to prospective lot purchasers?
Absolutely.
That there are hunting and shooting noise activities?
There's a huge woods between here and it's on the next road over. There's a huge woods, and they have where they do shoot, there's a 40-foot embankment that they shoot into the embankment.
But you can hear it.
I think you could probably hear it.
Yeah. That was a concern. And just one last question, I guess, from following up what Mr. Gordy had said under item 1199-9C, talks about safe vehicular and pedestrian movement. Mr. Gordy mentioned about the sidewalks. It seems to me as though if I were living at some point on Blossom Drive, I'd have to make a minimum counting turning out of my driveway 6 turns to get out of, to get out onto Delaware 40. Does this seem to be a good street grid layout to you, Mr. Murray? And one that would be safe?
On an earlier plan that we had provided, we actually had an interconnection from Stamen Drive at this location to Blossom Drive at this location to eliminate the number of turns. Namely the reason that we got rid of it was just to provide more open space in that location. Meetings that we had previously this week, a couple weeks prior, we had discussed the option of placing an interconnection in that area. So the plan that you have before you this evening was what we were asking for preliminary approval on in hopes of preserving that extra open space. There is a possibility in that location of us providing an interconnection. It's something that was there before. It's something that we did take away. So by providing that access there, I would think that in the way of the street grid that you were referring to, that it would make access, maybe with not quite as many turns as what you're referring to.
Yep. So you're in agreement with me that this isn't the safest layout.
I wouldn't say safest. I think that in the way of the roadway configuration, I don't think that the traveling throughout the development, that there would be any fear of safety in the way of vehicular access or pedestrian access through the property. In answering your question about the grid pattern, it is something that, as it had stated, we did have before. Not more so as safety, but simply for the flow of traffic through the site, not as an idea of safety, but we actually also had lots in that area before. Now, the Jay Duke with Coastal Soil Consultants Incorporated, who originally did the feasibility study, had called out the area where we're actually showing the active passive recreation area as an area where, although could be approved, it was a pocket where there would have to be sand mounds in that area for those lots, that he did not feel comfortable submitting a feasibility study with lots being shown in that area that would be having sand mounds or any type of septic systems. And that's when we did have an interconnection. When we lost the lots, it gave us an ample opportunity to make that a larger open space to be an amenity to the community. So I guess in answering your question, I don't think that the grid is shown from a safety perspective would be a problem for anyone traveling throughout the development. If you're asking if possibly providing that interconnection to the west would make it maybe a little smoother going through the development and not creating more turns, then I think that it would make it so you didn't have less turns. But I think in overall safety, I don't think that it would diminish the safety leaving the grid the way that it is now. If that answers your question.
It's an answer. That's all.
All right, sir. Mr. Burton.
In the forested wetlands, is there going to be access to that as well? Or is it just...
We weren't planning to provide access to that area, namely because it was delineated as being a 404 wetlands. Typically, you know, we're not trying to have it be a situation where, I mean, of course, you can't put much of a limitation on people who own the lots around that forested wetland areas from if they decide to venture into that area. So they decide to go for a walk or so forth, and they could, but in the way of placing any sort of walking-type trail or structure back there, you know, we were hoping to leave that area undeveloped in any way. So we're not showing an access to those areas, you know, other than where the stormwater management area, open space is, adjacent to it, but we're not providing any sort of pedestrian access to that wetland area.
Okay, and then the plan is for this walking trail to be installed?
Yes.
Here, and
right, that is the plan that we have, is to install the walking trail. And you know, as Mr. Lee had stated, I'm assuming with the covenants and restrictions that were submitted that it would leave an opportunity for the Homeowners Association to so change that if they choose. But as of right now, it's planned on being a series of interconnected walking trails through that area.
Okay. No further questions.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Lang.
There would be, I'm assuming, an access to the stormwater management area that's kind of landlocked.
Correct.
Along lots 114, 116, 98 through 104 in that area.
Correct. In fact, the conservation district, if it got to that point, they would require it for maintenance.
Yeah, it just doesn't show. Just for the record, I do have a copy of the plus report and the response.
Okay, very good.
I found that.
Very good. Hey, Mr. Counts?
Just to follow up on a question that was asked a minute ago about the wetlands. Is there going to be any kind of demarcation of the boundary of the wetlands so that you have a large number of lots that front, that back up to the wetlands, and how are you going to keep people from fertilizing, cutting trees, putting out buildings?
I was anticipating the question on the previous application and thought it would carry over to this one, but typically anymore, through applications we've sent through the Conservation District to Jessica Watson and Jim Elliott, they've been requiring in those areas for, at a minimum, that I guess I consider it construction fencing. The orange-type plastic fencing be placed to delineate where the wetlands are. Post-development, once the roadways are put in, once the final vegetative stabilization has taken place, so that there's a boundary there to truly show where that is. If the homeowner at that time chooses to remove that fencing, if they place their own fencing, then they can. We had another development in Millville where we did have wetlands. We had properties that, in the town of Millville, we actually had lot lines that crossed, and they had required as part of our application, on an application that was approved no more than a month ago, that we place orange construction fencing in that area. We're assuming, because of the nature of this development and the previous application, that if it were approved, that the same site, the same type stipulations would hold.
Couldn't you put something more permanent, more attractive than orange fencing? I mean,
it's not a subject that we've discussed in the way of placing any sort of permanent fencing along that area.
Might want to consider it. Thank you, that's all.
All right, sir, thank you. Mr. Roberts?
No, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. We'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak
in favor of subdivision 2005-63, Dream Builders Construction Incorporated. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2005-63? Anyone else in the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We invite you to spend the rest of your Thursday evening or Friday morning with us to see if we make a decision or you may call the office in the morning.